Our local newspapers are being merged, purged, shrunk, shut down, and looted by Wall Street profiteers. Yet, there's good news. In the towns those media vultures are torching, a phoenix is rising. Hundreds of determined locals, often led by people of color, are finding new ways to pay for and revive top-quality local journalism. For example, the Ferndale Enterprise moved to an old Victorian home, renting upstairs rooms to vacationers to subsidize the paper. Also, while aloof Wall Street owners have no connection to us or our towns, the scrappy new community papers are stressing their grassroots connection by moving into friendlier, more central, street-level spaces such as public libraries and community centers so that regular people can see them and have direct access to their reporters and editors. Then there's the editor of the Sahan Journal in Minneapolis, who moves his weekly editorial meeting to the offices of various grassroots groups so their members can help shape the paper's coverage. And in Marfa, Texas, the Big Bend Sentinel is literally serving the public, not only with a good weekly, but also with the Sentinel, a combo coffee shop, cozy bar, cafe, event space, and hangout for locals to meet and greet. In ways big and small, dedicated local journalists are experimenting with funding, structure, staffing, etc. to produce the news that democracy requires. Note to Wall Street vultures, these newspaper ventures aren't interested in scaling up to maximize investor profits. As they know, it was corporate cost-cutting, consolidation, and scaling that got us into today's mess of journalistic collapse. And, unlike the Wall Street model, their success is not measured simply by financial return, but also by how they do at keeping citizens informed and engaged. This is Jim Hightower saying, now that's real journalism. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you lowdowners who subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. You know who you are. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I still can't get enough of the March for Freedom. The March for the Taste of Freedom today there in the Capitol. And, you know, as I keep watching the video over and over again, and I have no idea why anyone in the Republican Party would follow Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene anywhere. Honestly, I don't get it. Be crazy, you know, do your thing, but they are, well, I think they're both going to lose in the next election, but they're crazy. They're really off the edge, but I guess they're raising a lot of money, so it's like anything, it's the money that talks. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the big Freedom March. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us, share some of her fabulous work over at Raw Story. If you haven't seen her, rawstory.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media how you can follow Sarah. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
It's a boot freedom.
It's a boot freedom. What are you, Canadian now?
I don't know. For some reason, whenever I try and do a Scottish accent, I have to say a boot.
You might as well, because the rest of it was a clown show anyway. So this fits right with what the geniuses there in our House of Representatives pulled off today.
I mean, really, it's kind of this bigger metaphor of the entire Republican Party following the biggest idiots in their party off a cliff. It makes total sense, and it's this massive metaphor. I was thinking though today about how. If John Boehner was still there, they'd be gone. he would have found some prostitute to, like, you know, entrap them or something, and he would get rid of them.
But dude, you've got Matt Gaetz, who there are credible reports being reported that he's had sex with a minor in Florida, and yet he's still lead, not just there, but leading the pack of crazy. He's the head of the 4G. Him, Green, Gohmert, and Gossert, evidently they showed up at a detention facility today demanding access. What the freak is that?
I thought that was a brilliant idea. I thought they should have let him in and then not let him out.
And then kept him, like Roach Motel. Yeah, I'm with you.
It's like Hotel California. You can come, but you can't leave. Gohmert tried to pull this whole, I have some kind of secret clearance or something, so you gotta let me in. And it's like, no you don't. Nobody would ever trust you with any kind of security clearance. The only kind of security clearance you have is that you can go through security.
Your That's wife it. Doesn't even let you know where the cookie jar is. What are you talking about?
Yeah, for real. Oh.
But this is this weird kind of entitlement that they have, that they think that now that, and I guess this shows that they don't really know their job or what their job is, that they think they can just walk in anywhere and everyone has to bow down.
And what's interesting is this is something that they try and fundraise off of. And I think a lot of crazy supporters of theirs actually go for it and we'll give them $25.
Yep. No, you're spot on. In fact, you know, I can't tell you how many tweet responses that I saw. People going, "This is illegal. This is against the law. They're breaking the law." I'm going, "No, dum-dum. You don't just get to walk into a prison, no matter who you are."
And what's interesting too is I wondered which prison it was, because they said that they were there to see the, the insurrectionists. There, I think, at last count, I heard that there were 66 that were in prison. I don't think that they're all in the same prison.
No.
So I wondered what prison they went to. Was it like the federal prison in Alexandria? Was it like the DC, city jail? Was it, because these are federal crimes. So why would they put them in the DC city? A bunch of people were arrested outside of Washington. So are they being held somewhere else? There's the one guy, the horns dude, who was sent to Denver for some kind of psych evaluation. We still haven't heard what's the status there. He could have already been abducted by aliens. I don't know.
And that would be a good punishment. But we did hear from Louis Go-Go Gohmert that the people in there are being treated worse than the bloodthirsty terrorists in Guantanamo Bay.
Which is hilarious, because it's like, well, you guys are the lawmakers. If you don't like the way people are treated in prison, then maybe pass some legislation about that. Like, I feel like we've kind of been talking about criminal, reform and prison reform for a pretty long time, but whatever. I just think it's hilarious.
Well, I mean, there's that old statement. If you want to turn a liberal into a conservative, you throw them in jail. You want to turn a conservative into a liberal, you throw them in jail. Yeah, jail's a bad place. Maybe you should have thought of that before you were going on your criming spree.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good indicator of some forethought there.
And the people who are in there, a year ago, they'd be telling you, prison's supposed to be hard. They got cable TV. They got swimming pools. It's easy. And now they're whining that, people don't like me. And, I'm worried. I have to get soap on the rope.
I wonder, honestly, I bet we could probably find Louis Gohmert for sure. We could find some video of him railing about how prison should be a terrible place. I don't know if we could with the other ones, because they haven't been in Congress for that long, but I guarantee you somewhere there is a video of Louis Gohmert railing about that.
You absolutely know there is. And it's just crazy, because you listen to the tantrums of these children, and it's what they are. What happened to statesmen? What happened to people who go to Congress to do something in the public interest, to do the right thing, to move the country forward, to make this a better place? All we got is a bunch of kids trying to score points on Twitter, leading our country. And it's crazy.
Well, whenever it comes to Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, they really kind of are just crazy children. They're people whose fathers made a whole lot of money, and they basically were able to buy their way into Congress. I don't think that's necessarily the case for Gohser. I don't know how the hell he got elected, but and Gohmert is just redistricting, gerrymandering the hell out of the state of Texas. So, these people are, this is how we get this stuff. If you guys don't want gerrymandering, then,
Yeah, I get that in the House. I get really the gerrymandering in the House. I got that. But how do you end up with, Florida? What's with Marco Rubio? How does that guy, represent the state of Florida, especially now that he's attacked the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, for wearing a face shield while in the Philippines? Hey, Dim, that's the law. You have to do that.
That was one of my favorite stories today, because it's kind of an indicator of Rubio just randomly sends stuff out into the ether of the world. And he doesn't necessarily think before he tweets. You know, if you're going to sort of assert something big, if you're going to attack the Secretary of Defense from a, you know, a lowly little, you know, scrawny Marco Rubio down in Florida who's never served a day in his life, you probably should Google it first. It's just me.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was just like, oh, this is all mask theater, except that everybody else, all of the military people that were standing in the line to greet him also had masks and shield on. And then you look at the embassies for the Philippines and the State Department information that's like, it's mandated that you wear a mask and shield. And then there's all these stories about how the Philippines mandated it. And you're like, how did you just not, like, I guess he missed that day in the news.
Freedom! Or... Freedom! Freedom!
I mean, that's the thing about the Philippines is that is not a happy place. That's a really kind of hardcore dictatorial. I mean, we've talked about how Trump worships Duterte because of his authoritarianism. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where the sec def showed up without a mask and shield on, they probably would have beat him to death.
Yeah, I mean, what happened to those that time when the Republicans were, you know, when Rubio himself was probably, oh no, they're great, we love them, and now they're what? They're making us wear masks? No, they're all cowards for not wearing for not refusing to wear a mask.
I would love to see Marco Rubio go to the Philippines and tell them how it's done.
I'd pay for the ticket.
Me too.
I would. I'd pay for the first class. I would never spring for a first class ticket for myself, but for Marco to go to the Philippines, I would do that.
I feel like we could fundraise the hell out of that. We could make that happen.
we most certainly should do. Now, interesting, funny, another one of these funny Republican stories, John Kennedy, the Republican from Louisiana, evidently attacking one of Biden's nominees. I'm looking at this Hampton Dillinger guy, who evidently Kennedy wasn't fond of, is this an actual question? Do you believe in God, boy? Really? This is your biggest concern?
That happened. I mean, it sort of was couched in this conversation about whether or not he's pro-choice or anti-choice, because Kennedy is rabidly anti-choice.
Right.
What's funny about it, though, is this comes after... there was just a rage fest from the Republican Party in whenever they were trying to get Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court. And you remember there was a lot of weird, sketchy things about like the church that she was involved in, and like it was a little culty, you know, and people were like, oh no, you're just like trashing to Catholicism. And it's like, well, she's a little bit of, you know, kind of a weird kind of Catholic. And so all these Republicans were like, how dare you question her faith? How dare you ask her about her church? This is all about religious freedom and blah, blah, blah. And then now Kennedy's out there being like, do you believe in God? Like, go away. Just stop. Why are you even there? Nobody wants to hear what you have to say.
It's really just incredible. But, you know, more importantly, I finally found out, and this is one of those things, I was a big fan of Michelle Bachmann's. She was crazy hot and crazy, which, you know, a perfect combination. And then she went away. She just decided she's going to leave, and I thought she was going to go back to Minnesota and do her thing. Evidently now she's running some group, but she was interviewed by one of these crazy religious groups about January 6th, and it was her opinion that January 6th was like a family reunion. Everyone was happy. It was the happiest day of her life. That the 5th and 6th, they were just praying. They had a worship band. It was fabulous. It was great. There was no insurrection. There were just good God-fearing Christians who wanted, because God wanted the vote to be right, and that's why what it was. It wasn't an insurrection. There weren't terrorists. They're good God-fearing people.
There was that magazine, I think it was like Time Magazine or Newsweek or something, that she was on the cover of. And this is back way long time ago when she ran for president, like maybe in 2008 or something like that. And I remember that photo just being like crazy eyes Bachmann.
Oh, yeah.
And that was so weird. And every time I think of her now, that's what I think of, is just like the physical manifestation of crazy eyes. And I, you know, maybe she has the kind of family that wants to just tear stuff down and tear things up and destroy a building. And, you know, I usually, like, our family reunions are really just about food and fun. And there's a big cornhole tournament, that people take very seriously in the family. Maybe Michelle Bachmann just has a family that goes to a Walmart and starts looting. I don't know. She seems like the type.
Yeah. I mean, I'd wondered where she went, and now I know where she is. She's out, you know, crazier than ever. But the thing is I always thought she was like a kind of fun crazy, you know, kind of like, you know, not let's, hey, I mean, let's.
She was the kind of crazy where everybody knew she was crazy.
Yeah.
The Republican Party actually felt like she was nuts and sort of acknowledged it and didn't really take her seriously. And what's scary now is that they actually do treat the crazy people like they're legitimate. And I mean, in what world? Like, Mitch McConnell doesn't think that. How is it that McCarthy is, you know, again,
well,
John
McCarthy's
Boehner,
a moron. Everybody I've talked to who served in Congress, my friend Bob Ney, you know, Joe Walsh, the Tea Party guy, Nancy Pelosi, they all agree he's a moron.
Yeah.
That's how it happens. When your leadership is run by morons, when the kid who had the dunce cap on every day is your leader, you have problems.
What my favorite part of this is that he honestly thinks that he is going to be speaker.
No.
And I can't imagine how that's going to happen.
Never.
There's got to be some crazy gerrymandering that would have to happen to make that happen. But I mean, that's reason enough. You would think Republicans and Democrats would agree on that.
No, because
like,
because
the worst possible person.
McCarthy can't be speaker because Donald Trump's going to be speaker. The Republicans are going to take the House. They're going to take the Senate. They're going to immediately make Donald Trump the Speaker of the House. Then they're going to impeach Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and they're going to reinstall Donald Trump as president. They've already got it.
Yeah.
It's already gamed out. They've already got it. It's written down. This is their plan for 2022.
Boy, they better hope that actually happens. I don't see any other way that's going to work, but. Who am I? What do I know?
Now, the weird thing is Trump's, some are fearing that Trump's prowess, his word, his endorsement is losing a little bit of steam. Because you look in Texas, where the GOP candidate, this Susan Wright, lost to, I guess, another Republican. But I loved her comment that she knew she was in trouble when people were showing up wearing masks.
Oh, wow. Oh, goodness. I didn't see that quote, but that's a funny one. To be fair, she is a terrible candidate. Everybody on the ground there was talking about how there was no way that she was ever going to win. Donald Trump, when he went in there, all he did was endorse her. He didn't drop any money. He didn't do anything for her. But now that she has lost and sort of tarnished his name, now in the Ohio 15th, that special election, the primary is about to happen Tuesday. And the final election, the general election there, is the November 2nd. So now Trump is like, oh, crap. Because there are all these stories about how people are thinking, oh, maybe Trump isn't that powerful anymore. Maybe people don't honestly believe that much in him. And it's like, did you not see the last election? You know, were you not there? And so I think this is one of those things where he's trying really, really hard to remain relevant, and he dumped something like $350,000 into an independent expenditure for the primary. He's done a robocall. He did that rally in Columbus where he invited the guy up on stage. And what's funny is this isn't like some, you know, like police officer, firefighter, or, you know, virtue signaling, whatever, Republican. This guy's a lobbyist. It's like, really? That's who you're putting your money behind, is the lobbyist?
Yep.
Okay. That's like the worst thing that you can ever call somebody in politics. But I mean, that's kind of how Trump was for most of his presidency. There was a really big revolving door from Trump bringing people into the White House and people leaving the White House to try and make money on J Street.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, he's in Texas, at least he's trying to blame the club for growth. He didn't really want to endorse. He just took their word for it. He didn't do his research so much. It's the club for growth's fault that she lost.
Oh, I'm sure. Whatever. that makes no sense. What is surprising to me is that the club for growth would even play in that primary. That seems like a seat that's probably going to go Republican. And to be fair, the guy who ran against Wright is not that much far off from her. He's pretty crazy too. But, you know, it's somebody who's actually served in government and knows how to spell government. So maybe that's what it is.
So I understand the former guy has a helicopter for sale. Another one?
Yes.
We liquidating?
You know, I wondered that. So the day after the election in November, he put up his 1997 fancy luxury helicopter with 6 seats and soundproof system and all this crap. He put it up for sale and I swear to you, it said on the ad, best offer. It's like, are you really that desperate? And what's funny is this time, it's a 1990 copter, so this thing is like 30 years old. It's almost as old as me. and he's trying to sell it for $1 million. I think probably like that's what folks say that it's worth. But again, best offer. And so you kind of have to wonder, like, is he hurting for money? Is that what this is about?
I can't imagine that he is, because didn't he raise $75,000 from the minions to stop the steal and hasn't spent a buck?
Yeah, a whole, not 75 grand, 75 million.
That's right, 75 million, duh.
And it was all on this idea of stop the steal, and he hasn't had a single election lawsuit ever since then. I don't know the degree to which he can use that money for legal services. I think that there are some rules about that. But I would not be surprised if he was paying himself a very large salary, paying his kids a very large salary, doing some reimbursements to Trump org. You know, the thing about a PAC is that a lot of that stuff has to be reported to the SEC. So I hope that they understand that. But yeah, so I think he's liquidating. I think he's trying to sell some stuff off. He had 3 helicopters. He's got 1 left after he sells this one. So I guess we'll find out what else he's going to try and pawn off. He had a bad year last year, to be fair. I mean, like, he was having a rough time for the last several years at some of his properties because his base does not stay at his properties. They don't buy condos in his building because they're too expensive. So, you know, all of this money that he lost through COVID because the hospitality industry just got completely destroyed last year. You know, like, he's having a rough time.
Yeah.
And now he's got 11 billion lawsuits. So, ouch.
Exactly how much is 11 billion?
It's kind of like a nebulous thing, kind of like the color puke. You don't really know what it is. You just sort of throw it out there.
Or throw it up and out and down. Okay, yeah. I got it. I don't know where to go with that after that, so thanks for that one. But, you know, we find out this week after the testimony Tuesday of the Capitol Police and the Metro Police that we've got Mo Brooks wearing a bulletproof vest to the family reunion that Michelle Bachmann was at. Why is this a big deal?
So what was crazy to me is that he willingly admitted this with like a grin on his face. Like, he was divulging something where he was like, hey man, I got the inside scoop, if you know what I mean, right? And it was kind of like this thing where you're like, oh, you just revealed something that's going to get you in trouble. You're going to get subpoenaed for this information. Basically, he told the reporter that he was given a tip that it was going to be, you know, a risky it was going to be some risky stuff. There were going to be some hijinks, and that he should, you know, do something to protect himself. So he wore some body armor. That's why he wore that big yellow coat, with big yellow windbreaker over it. And I just think, like, this is one of those things where, you know, it's hard to say that this was a a completely peaceful, fine tourist visit, family reunion with people hugging and kissing whenever you feel the need to wear a bulletproof vest. But the question is, who told him that?
Steve Bannon, obviously.
When did they tell him? Yeah. Well, I wondered that. I wondered if it was Bannon or if he, you know, was coordinating with some of the militia guys. That's a big question. Who was taking folks around the Capitol and giving them the tours and giving them, you know, diagrams of what the Capitol looked like? Steve Bannon, ahead of the event, was basically sounding the alarm that this is going to be hell. This is going to be huge. The way that he described it, it was very, very clear that he knew exactly what was going to happen. And he knew it back in like December. So one of the other questions, though, is in Michael Bender's new book about the Trump administration, he has this weird section where Trump is in the big tent that they had, sort of the pre-tent, like their little green room outside of the stage for when they were going to go up to speak to the crowd in the Ellipse. And you remember the video with Donald Trump Jr. that was filming, showing everybody what was in there, and right. Ivanka was in there and all of that stuff. At one point, Trump turns, and this isn't in the video, but at one point in the book, there's this amazing excerpt where Trump sort of asks his aides, do you think it's going to get violent? And Judd Deere, one of his comms guys, is like, no, of course not. Why would it get violent? Your people are never violent. Why? That makes no sense. Everybody's always really chill and fine and, you know, they're cool or whatever. So then Trump basically responded, I don't know, they're pretty fired up out there. And it was kind of this idea of Trump suspected that something was going to happen. And if Bannon knew, I mean, that's the thing. If Steve Bannon knew, he told Donald Trump. He might not work for the White House anymore, but I guarantee you he and Trump still talk.
Yeah.
And I bet Bannon had told him what to expect. And if Trump knew, the piece of his speech, this is in one of the other books, I can't remember if it was Michael Wolff, I think it was the Wolff book or the Bender book. They talked about how that speech that he gave was all about, basically was all completely written by his staff, but that one line where he said, we're going to walk to the Capitol and I'm going to go with you. All of that was ad-lib. His staff didn't write any of that. That was him. That right. was his choice to say that. So then you start thinking, okay, well, if he knew that this was going to get violent, if he knew that this was bad, and then he basically, you know, himself decided to provoke it, to stoke the fires, then that's a pretty big responsibility. And I would hope that the Capitol Select Committee is going to try and figure that out.
Yeah, I hope so, too. But do you buy the ham-handed kind of coup attempt that they were going to cause this chaos, the Secret Service was going to take Mike Pence, and they're going to put him in a secret location somewhere, and then just hold him there so that they couldn't certify the election? Do you buy that?
Well, I think what they tried to do, and this is to Pence's credit, is the story is that they took him down to the basement because he wanted to stay on the floor. He wanted to stay as close to the floor as possible. And finally, they got so close, I think it was like 40 paces from the door. The Secret Service was like, we got to go. We got to go. And that's when they rushed him down the steps in that video. So they're underground in an entrance that is seriously secure that only, you know, the president and the speaker and those folks can use. And his Secret Service were like, you need to get in the car. And he was like, hell no. If you put me in the car, you're driving me off. And I think that was what they intended to do, is they wanted to put him in the car, drive him to Andrews, and stick him on a plane. And at that point, they can't certify the election. And Pence was like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where I come back to, I get all of that, and you've got the theory has me into that point, but there's tomorrow. You clear all that out, you bring him back, and you do it tomorrow. I mean, whoever devised this plan didn't think about do it tomorrow.
No,
did they plan on holding Pence indefinitely?
You know, I don't know. I also wondered at what extent did they were they trying to create so much violence that Trump could declare martial law? Because if he could do that, then he stays in power. He could sort of try this indefinite, you know, rule thing. I don't know that it necessarily would have worked. I think you know, that would have ended up in the Supreme Court really quickly, and the Supreme Court would have been like, yeah, no, bye-bye.
Even his Supreme Court, I think, would have said, yeah, no. No, I'm
yeah,
right there
which
with
is,
you.
Which is funny. A lot of his books, the books that I've been reading, they talk about how much Kavanaugh really hates him.
Good. That's the best. Good. That's the only answer I got. Good. But I hope we get to the bottom of it. There's part of me goes, I hope someone was dumb enough to come up with this half-hearted, half-hammed kind of idea that, hey, this is how we could do it, because it's so stupid.
Well, here's my theory. All of the militia people, all of those top guys that were planning all of this ahead of time, the people who were getting the tours, they are going to need to do something to deal. They're going to have to give something up to get a lesser sentence. And the only thing that they're going to have is being able to rat on the congressman.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that happens. And if it does, you'll be here to keep us informed and up to date. Sarah, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Keep up the great work there at Raw Story. I hope folks check out the work you do. As always, great stuff. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Again, make sure you check out her work over at rawstory.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Biden welcomes the agreement as one that would show the United States can do big things.
$1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill inches forward in divided Senate.
Dead fish everywhere.
Florida Gulf Coast hit with massive red tide. Plus,
we must do better.
Oregon moves ahead with historic clean energy legislation.
All of that history in the making and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The Department of Energy has a sensor array computer analysis capability that can detect in real time the lightning strikes that might set off a blaze.
We have lightning sensor rays? That's awesome. Do we by any chance have anything that can stop climate change? Because I switched to paper straws a year ago and I don't think they're working.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, big news I know for you when it comes to infrastructure, which you've been talking about for many, many years. Maybe it'll now actually happen.
Maybe. A bipartisan infrastructure deal passed a key procedural hurdle to begin debate in the U.S. Senate. The nearly $1 trillion plan includes $550 billion in new spending over 10 years to improve the nation's aging infrastructure, including significant spending to repair water systems, modernize the electric grid, and build out the first ever national electric vehicle charging network. If the bill ultimately passes, and that is a very big if, it would be one of the most significant long-term investments in nearly a century. On the Senate floor on Wednesday, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer vowed to pass both this bill and President Biden's much broader $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation package.
Yeah, the one with all the climate change stuff in it.
I have laid out a two-track strategy on infrastructure, a bipartisan bill focused on traditional brick-and-mortar infrastructure projects, and a budget reconciliation bill, where Democrats plan to make historic investments in American jobs, American families, and efforts to fight climate change.
Politico reports that former President Donald Trump is trying to sabotage the bipartisan deal because Republicans never gave him an infrastructure package.
Because he never actually tried.
Meanwhile, 17 states are under some kind of heat watch or warning, with 30 million Americans likely to see triple-digit temperatures due to the fifth heat dome in just 6 weeks to stall over the country. Some towns in Montana and Wyoming have seen more more days above 100 degrees Fahrenheit so far this year than Dallas, Texas. Mm. A new study from Climate Central confirms that since 1970, more than 90% of U.S. cities have seen a big increase in the number of days above 77 degrees Fahrenheit. The researchers remind dog owners that temperatures above 77 degrees also mean pavement surfaces in direct sunlight can get as hot as 125 degrees, creating painful and even dangerous conditions for dogs' paws. They also warn that dogs can experience heat-related illnesses just like people. The observed increase in extreme weather events like heat waves is also reducing the reliability of nuclear power plants. A comprehensive new global analysis of the world's nuclear fleet calculates that extreme weather outages at nuclear plants are occurring nearly 8 times more frequently now than in the 1990s, due in part to heat and drought that limit the availability of cold enough water to cool the reactors.
Yeah, the heat warms the rivers, the lakes, whatever they're using, and that water is not cool enough to keep the nuclear power plant cool.
Kind of a problem.
Yeah.
The study also found that hurricanes and typhoons are now a leading cause of nuclear plant outages.
That's chilling.
Florida is grappling with a massive toxic algae bloom that has littered Tampa Bay and about 100 miles of the state's Gulf Coast with dead fish and other marine animals. Red tides naturally occur off the coast of Florida, but scientists say they're now getting bigger, more frequent, and much worse because of pollution and warming ocean temperatures due to man-made climate change.
And don't they normally come later in the year than this one is coming now?
Yes, they do. Finally, some good news. Oregon's Democratic Governor Kate Brown signed into law one of the nation's most ambitious renewable energy plans. Among a number of strong provisions, it tightens the timetable for the state's two major power companies to reach emissions-free electricity and bans the construction and expansion of fossil fuel power plants. It also allocates $50 million in grants for community-based clean energy projects. Governor Kate Brown emphasized environmental justice in a signing ceremony on Tuesday.
The impacts of climate change are not felt equally. In every crisis and every natural disaster, those who already face disparities due to discrimination and racism are hit the hardest. We must do better.
Good. Glad to see action happening at the state level while D.C. dithers. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Today, the group Citizens Against Government Waste came out with a report. Not so much of a report, just as a story saying that there's support building returning to Congress for earmarks. Now, I've said from the beginning, getting rid of earmarks was a bad idea. Should have reformed how it was done. Maybe a little bit more oversight, a little more transparency. But the idea that representatives go to Washington and go, hey, we need water systems, we need highways, we need, you know, libraries, museums, hospitals, whatever. We need money to help build our infrastructure, take care of our citizens, you know, bring something back to the district is a good thing. It's how we build things, how we create jobs, good stuff. They don't seem so thrilled, but they pointed out it's almost going to be bipartisan because a lot of people are asking for it. And also have gone after and attacked Bob Ney, our next guest, on him abusing earmarks, along with Randy Duke Cunningham. And here to share some thoughts on the return of earmarks and the possibility that, well, did he in fact abuse the earmarks? I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney, to come back. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
So I was surprised to see you named in this, and again, tied to Jack Abramoff. Did you ever do any earmarks for Abramoff?
No, I am the only person in U.S. history where Abramoff asked me to consider an amendment to a bill, not an earmark, an amendment to a bill. I told him I would take a look at it. I'd have to see. I didn't want the bill ruined. Never laid it on the table, never laid a draft down. That was all verified. and they went after me for that. And that was not an earmark. That was in a piece of legislation. He wanted some language we never did. I read these, and I just love how they – and it's, honestly, this is way up above me – how they were just put in there. Well, Randy Duke Cunningham, he did some earmarks. That's true. He got the watches or cars or whatever he got. But they just like to throw things out there. Well, you know, Jack Abramoff did the – Bob Ney did the earmarks for him. Well, no, I didn't. And as far as the whole issue itself, there was more bipartisan activity when we had earmarks, number one, than when we didn't. Number two, do you want, as a citizen in, you know, wherever, Pennsylvania, Ohio, any state, any little burb, do you want some unelected person that doesn't even know where the city is or anything about it sitting in D.C. saying, well, I think I'll give Carlisle, Pennsylvania, that, you know, that needed appropriation. You want your legislators to go back home and talk to your citizens and council people and township trustees and mayors, et cetera, and governors. You want them to be able to do it.
Yep.
Now, I am 100% in favor of put your name to it. You know, here's who did the earmark. You know, they did it. Their name's on it. And then if there's any, you know, bad things that happen, you've got their name on it.
Absolutely. No, it's one of those things where, you know, I've been saying for the longest time, if you're not, you know, getting something out of it to bring back to your community, the obvious answer is no, we're not going to do anything. And it would make this infrastructure bill so much easier to get through if everyone said, hey, look, we've got things we need. Let's put this in there. Let's divvy up the funds. Let's make sure things get done. Because, hey, that's how we move forward as a country. That's how we've invested in all the things we've done over the years.
And this is, you know, citizens against government waste, and, you know, so they'll pick out these things, you know, of requests, again, that are vetted. Most of these are vetted. They're vetted through local officials, citizens, development districts, you know, et cetera. So they always bring these up, and, you know, fine. If there's been some bad things done in relationship to earmarks, you know, fine. You know, punish the people that did it. Put people's names on it for from here on out, and then we know exactly who did what and why they did it. I see no problem with it. I think it will help the citizens, and I do think it helps the system. All I know is when we had them, we got along a lot better, R's and the D's.
I absolutely agree. You know, it's like that whole, you know, how do you herd cats? You know,
right.
you gotta have the pile of food there. This is how you herd politicians. Give them the things that they need to go home, have their ribbon cutting ceremonies, get the pats on the back. Look what I brought home. You know, all that stuff. I'm not against it.
All right.
Let's move on. Congress has passed a $2.1 billion capital security bill. I guess the Senate passed it. It's going to Biden. Is this needed? I mean, do we need more funding for capital security, or should we have used what we had better?
Well, I think it's that's a great question, actually. I think it's a combination of both. No amount of money in the world would have, you know, corrected why the, you know, Fed was ass late, or why they came in late, or why no one listened to the, you know, chief of police in the sense of the Capitol Police Board or the sergeant of arms. Nothing would have changed that. So the system needs changed of how it responds. You know? Now, as far as needing money, I do think they'll need, you know, new security money. But again, unless they dig deep on this committee that's, you know, going on, the January 6th commission, unless they dig deep, then, you know, all the money in the world is not going to prevent, one, what happened. And unless we beef up our security to find out about these radical groups, you know, unless we do that, again, then we're not going to be prepared for some type of activity in horrible situations like we had on 6th.
Now, the Twitters were going all lighting up over the fact that AOC and the squad voted against this, as I understand. I guess their concerns were there weren't any police reforms in this. Am I getting that right?
Yes. They wanted some police reforms in it. Now, I guess you'd have to look at the situation of, you know, were they talking about police reforms on Capitol Hill? And they're not. They're talking, you know, generically about police reforms, which I think one could argue, you know, they have a point, they have an issue, and they have a voice. I think one could argue, you know, overall reform, what's going to happen with the police and how that's handled would be in a police reform bill. I'm not sure you throw that into a bill that's designed for the security of the Capitol, because the issue has not been, in general, the Capitol Hill police being overly aggressive with, you know, citizens.
Right.
The citizens in this case were overly aggressive with the Capitol Hill police.
Right. Now, this was an overwhelmingly passed bill, 98-0 in the Senate, 416 in the House, 416 to 11 in the House. Now, this, you know, as I'm looking at this, you know, immediately my mind goes to the Republicans who have been basically attacking the four police officers who testified on Tuesday. This is them reclaiming, hey, we care about the Capitol Police. And now that you have AOC and the squad voting against it, basically putting themselves in the line of fire to now give the Republicans the opportunity to go back and reclaim their we love the police mantra.
Well, it'll give them a bit of a chance because of the high profile name of AOC to go after her, but they can't go after the Democratic Party because overwhelmingly the Democratic Party said, well, wait a minute, we're still going to do this bill.
Right.
We're not going to stop this bill as a result of the issue with AOC. They'll take that up in another bill. So the Democratic Party can't be, you know, attacked. Now, you're right. The Republicans will say we're standing up for, you know, law and order. They're actually standing up for their own protection is what they're doing. And I don't know, and this goes back to the conversation we had yesterday, I don't know how anybody who serves there in their right mind or conscience can look at what happened on the 6th and not say that, you know, this was a terrorist attack and they tried to kill the very officers that try to make sure all of the members and staff get home every night safe. I don't know how with good conscience they can't think about that. So if they want to stand up and say, yeah, we support them, well, the way to support the Capitol Hill police is not to say the terrorists were tourists.
Or as Michelle Bachmann said, it was just a family reunion.
Right. Right. Oh, I didn't hear that. I didn't know that.
I had wondered which hole she had crawled into, but you know, she brought her crazy self out. It was a big prayer day. Everyone was praying, and this was, you know, kind of the argument being this was God's will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you served with her, right?
No, I missed her.
Oh, did you? You were lucky enough to miss that.
I missed her. Yes.
Yeah, because I
served with some other entertaining people, Steve King, you know.
No, she was Fruit Loops, and. You know, but you know, I never really thought in a dangerous kind of way, and I'm not denigrating, you know, people with mental illness, because I think she's just plain nuts, not mentally ill, just nuts. But I never put her in the dangerous category like you see a lot of the Greens and the Gohmerts and the Gossarts and the Gates. You know, and speaking of the 4Gs, did you see the stunt they pulled today, trying to go to a jail and demanding to get in?
No. For what reason?
They wanted to investigate, because evidently, according to Louis Go-Go Gohmert, that the martyrs who are being held are being treated worse than, quote, the bloodthirsty terrorists in Guantanamo Bay. And he demands access to the prison because he has super secret special clearance and they should let him in.
Wow. And who are these people he wants to see?
He wants to see the people that were arrested because of January 6th. The martyrs.
When are the Republicans, the ones doing this, when are they going to learn to stop? I mean, really, that's bizarre.
No, they're playing for the base.
I did serve with him, so.
Was he as crazy then as he is now?
Well, he built upon it. Like anything, a fine wine ages, you know, and gets finer. He got crazier.
He
started out unbalanced. But to do what he's done today is just, that's ridiculous.
No, I mean, the four of them, they had a whole stunt. They brought cameras. They were outraged. They're trying to raise money off of it because they wanted to go in and inspect the jails. Now, you were a member of Congress for years. Did you ever think you had the right just to walk into any federal building, any federal, you know, detention center or anything unannounced and just show up and go, let me in?
I mean, you could do it if you were going to, you know, an agency like HUD or something like that, a building. But absolutely, you can't do it for security purposes. And by the way, as you know, I was on the other side of those bars. So you just can't, you know, walk in. fact, one former member of Congress tried to come see me, and it caused a, you know, I thought I was going to be beaten with a baton by the guards. But you just can't do it. There are security factors. It would be unconscionable. I would walk up to a detention center and say I want in.
Yeah, it's crazy, but this is what these people are doing. But, you know, even worse. I mean, you know, even worse than this, we had the March for the Taste of Freedom. Did you see the big demonstration they had, where about 50 of them walked from the House side to the Senate side in protest of having to wear a mask?
Right, yeah, and, you know, of course, when I was there, too, I got tired of those events where you're walking to the other chamber and you're, you know, trying to make an issue. It's like, okay, that's enough. Yeah, those get very tiresome.
But I guess you didn't have selfie sticks back then.
No, we didn't. We barely got we had Blackberries when 9/11 occurred, and there was only 200 of them. Now we had 6,000 of them within 2 months after that, but there was only 200. Yeah, we didn't have selfie sticks.
Yeah, so I mean, this was an interesting stunt. But I got to be honest with you, if I'm a member of Congress, I'm not following, you know, 4G and, you know, the Gohmert Gates and Green and the other Gosar and Lauren Boebert. I'm not following that clan of crazy. I mean, I may do something, but not behind their banner.
Well, if I'm Republican and I'm going to argue that, you know, Donald Trump had nothing to do with them storming the Capitol, okay, if that's going to be my argument, I still need to argue that the people that stormed the Capitol were not good. They were not good people. I mean, if you're going to try to defend Trump, why would you turn around and say, but they were tourists. They were taking pictures. Why would you want to mix those two issues?
Yeah,
I don't get it.
I don't get it at all. It's a very strange day. You know, and the mask thing is crazy. And I like what Tim Ryan, the congressman from Ohio and the candidate for Senate in Ohio. And I got to tell you, I hope your state of Ohio comes to its senses and votes for this guy, because I like him a lot. But, you know, he came out and he said, look, you know, I hate wearing this damn mask. And I do, too. Hate wearing it. Hate it. But you do it out of respect for others. You do it to protect others and yourself, too, a little bit. But as a sign of respect for others, I think that's a big part of this. And I guess the Republicans have shown they don't care about anybody but themselves. And even then, they don't care about themselves.
I really hate this has become a blue state, red state deal. I mean, I know Republicans that wear masks, but, you know, in general, it's like, yeah, well, if you wear the mask, then you're pro-Biden. I don't understand, you know, this is an individual thing for the good of the whole that you wear these. I mean, I think that the CDC made a horrible mistake and say, well, let's do the volunteer plan, the honesty plan. If you've been vaccinated, all of a sudden every mask went off. I think, you know, we just needed to give it more time and then vaccinations, and we would be in better shape today.
Yeah. Now, but, you know, but here again, you look at this, what's going on in the House, where the House doctor, I guess there's a doctor for the for Congress. They've said, look, in the House, you guys got to start wearing these masks on the floor. Because so many Republicans are not vaccinated. And as the story that I understand, and maybe you know more than I do, on the Senate side, you know, the people who are probably more at risk and closer to, you know, getting sick and dying than those in the House, they've all been vaccinated. So it's a different environment.
It is. It's like this defiance thing in the House. And here's another thing, too. Why do you – let's look at this politically for a second, if we don't want to look at concern and courtesy for people, Rick. Let's look at it politically. Why would you want to be a member of Congress who are out, you know, around their constituents you're going to be accused of giving COVID to your constituents? That's really not a good campaign ad. You know, Congressman so-and-so gave COVID to grandma. I really don't think that's a good campaign ad.
Yeah. Vote for me. I'm a super spreader.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but here's the weird thing. I can see the Boeberts and the Gates and the Greens and all of them going, yeah, that's what we want. I can see that. It's crazy. Crazy times we live in.
That's terrible.
But Bob, as always, I appreciate the time, the insight, always good stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Seriously, I mean, I look at this and it's really just kind of craziness. The fact that you have these folks who... And I know it sounds like we're beating a dead horse over here, but, you know, at the end of the day, wow, the level of entitlement the level of selfishness. And look, I hate wearing those masks as much as anybody. Always have. From the beginning, always hated it. But there's a level of, and I guess, you know, maybe it was my mother taught me right. Maybe I was raised right. You know, maybe, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm still the guy who opens doors for people. Maybe we're not that society anymore. I don't know. But wow. You got to wonder on a certain level. These, as I started off today talking about, these are the people that have been elected to lead us. These are the people who are supposed to solve the problems of our day. These are the people who are we empower to do our work, and yet all they seem hell-bent on is scoring cheap political points and making things worse. This is where, you know, this is where I go. I reach across the aisle and say, hey, take your party back to some bit of sanity. Come on over to the sane side a little bit. Not all the way. You don't have to come all the way. Just a little bit. I mean, does anybody seriously think that Gates and Green and Gohmert and Gosar should have gotten into a prison? Just waltzed right in? Do you think that should have been able to happen unannounced? Do you really think that's not how the real world works. And they knew it. It was a political stunt to enrage their base and raise money. This is all a big ripoff. Now, do I believe their hatred of wearing masks is real? Yeah. Do I think they care about you or anybody else? No. This is the party of hooray for me and the heck with everybody else. The one who dies with the most toys wins. That's that party. Greed is good. This is them. And this is what this is manifested into. This kind of extreme childishness. Does it get any better? I don't know. Hope so. I keep hoping the GOP finds sanity, but every time I turn around, there's another story of another one of them doing something crazy. Is that our news media only picking out the insanity because it sells? Some. I guarantee there's some of that. But there's so much of it. How can you not? There's so much crazy out there. And again, like I said a moment ago, I'm not putting down people with true mental illness. These people don't have mental illness. They're just nuts. Sadly, Arkansas, the Children's Hospital there has reported a record number of children in the state with COVID-19. They are saying that the hospitalization rate is way up. They're concerned that their hospitals are filled. The children's hospitals are at peak, they say. The real surge is that they had not seen previously. So, again, what the GOP, the WWGOP wants you to believe is, it's not that bad. And look, it's not going to kill everybody. And earlier, Pete Domek was right. It doesn't have a fatality rate high enough to turn Florida or Texas blue. But maybe we get rid of some of them. I'm at that point. Because I'm walking around a store today. I've got this damn mask on and I'm not happy about it. Because we could be through this already. We could have been done with this by now. We have the vaccine. It's what we did all last year to get to this point, to have something where we could protect ourselves. And yet you got these people running around going, no, don't do that. Vaccine's going to kill you. Very bizarre, friends. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, thericksmithshow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the programs on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. email Rick. At Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.